The following is an unrehearsed interview for the Kentucky Oral History Commission by John Klee with Mr. Lawrence Newman, who is the Regional Director of the Tobacco Inspection Service for the United States Department of Agriculture here in Lexington, Kentucky. We're conducting the interview at his office in Lexington on May 14th, 1987. Mr. Newman, I always start these by just asking a little bit about yourself. Could you tell me a little bit about your background, where you were born, raised, and those kind of things?
Well, actually born in Bracken County down near a little village called Milford. Let's see, what else could I tell you?
Your parents were involved in agriculture?
My father was primarily a farmer, though he worked at other things part of the time, and I grew up on the farm. Mm-hmm. So I've actually been on the farm practically all my life.
Yes, sir.
This position that I occupy here is full-time at present, but up until the past two or three years, I worked a seasonal job and traveled to all the tobacco markets in the Carolinas and Virginia and Georgia and Florida and Kentucky. I've now been with the Tobacco Grading Service or Inspection Service for almost 31 years.
Okay. How did you first get into that business?
Well, I guess curiosity, I hauled a crop of tobacco to the market over at Cynthia and just noticed that there was people grading tobacco and got people asked questions about it and so forth, so I decided I'd like to try it, and I applied for a job, and 2 years later they hired me, and I've been with them ever since.
Okay, now grading tobacco at that time when you began, was that a seasonal job at that
time?
That
was a seasonal job, and I only graded burley at that time.
You were just doing the
first 4 years, I just worked the Burley region, graded Burley tobacco.
In Kentucky here?
In Kentucky.
Were you at more than one market at that time, or just
well,
on one market?
Well, one market per year, but started at Maysville and worked on that market the first four seasons.
Yes, sir.
And then they moved me down to Harrodsburg, and I stayed three seasons. And then during this time, I started going to the flue-cured region, which was in the eastern part of North Carolina and Georgia and Florida.
Uh-huh.
Started going down there. And then I worked, I believe, 3 years at Harrodsburg after the training process was pretty well complete. And then they transferred me back to Maysville for a couple of years and then to Lexington. So I've been all around during these 30 years.
Okay. When did, of course, obviously, to get to this position, the regional director, you've had promotions along the way. What steps do you take? You were a grader to begin with, and then I guess you supervise graders.
Right. You start out as, we'll say, a journeyman grader. Mm-hmm. After they train you for two or three seasons, you're what is known as a journeyman grader.
Mm-hmm.
And then for each set of buyers that there is on the various markets, we have a group of graders to go with these buyers, and each set of graders has a head grader.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the next step up the line from a journeyman grader. And from there, you progress up through the ranks as a circuit supervisor is the next step up the line. And with our present setup or chain of command, you go from a circuit supervisor to an assistant regional director, and then finally to the regional director.
Okay.
And that's the last step in the field. If you go in higher than that, you've got to go to Washington.
I see. Okay. So you're right below that step to Washington. Let's go back to that beginning then and tell me what a grader does. Now, you're hired by the United States Department of Agriculture.
Right. We're USDA employees under civil service.
Okay.
And we're hired primarily to examine and describe a farmer's crop of tobacco once he puts it on the market for sale.
Yes, sir.
In describing it, we look at various aspects of the tobacco. We have actually 10 elements of quality that we use to describe the tobacco.
Okay.
Now, we don't need all 10 elements for every pile of tobacco we look at to arrive at a grade.
But you've got these 10 things are your criteria.
Right.
Could you mention a few of those?
We have the 10 things. Well, primarily, I will say, we like to say they're all equal, but the basic things that you look to is the body of the tobacco, the color intensity of the tobacco, and the amount of injury that it might have from insects or from handling, and the maturity of the tobacco is very important. How ripe that tobacco was when it was taken out of the field, whether it was just barely mature, or was it ripe, or was it overripe, and that sort of thing.
walk, describe with me through each one of those. Now, when you talk about body to back, you're talking about how...
when we talk about that, we're talking about the thickness of the leaf, how mm-hmm. heavy it would feel in your hand, or how thick the leaves feel. Mm-hmm. And if you're familiar with a plant at tobacco, you know, generally speaking, the leaves on the bottom of the stalk are the thinnest, and then as you move up the stalk, the leaves get thicker all the mm-hmm. way. So that's where we can get to when we're talking about judging body. We start mm-hmm. with the very thin tobacco on the bottom of the stalk, and okay. and then our range runs all the way from thin or tissuey to heavy. Mm-hmm. So the heaviest tobacco is the red, we'll say chewing tobacco, off yes. the top of the stalk. Mm-hmm. And then maybe along about the middle of the stalk, you have that medium to thin body tobacco, which is primarily cigarette tobacco, mm-hmm. and the bottom leaves are extremely thin, and they're cigarette tobacco too, but they're right. generally a little lower quality yes. than the rest of the stuff.
Okay, so you've got body, now you then you have color.
We have color, and that to us the color is, well, it's broken down into degrees, such as the very best we have, we'll call it a bright color. Mm-hmm. And we have a strong color, and then we have a moderate color, and then a weak color, and a pale color. Mm-hmm. So, depending pretty much on the maturity of the tobacco, has a whole lot to do with setting the color on the tobacco. If it's cut mm-hmm. a little bit soon, it will have a tendency to be have a little slickish feel to it, and the color will not be as strong or as not a rich color. You know, you mm-hmm. see things right. that have a very, well, we say a very rich color, and then we have some that has an old sort of a faded, pale color. So mm-hmm. that's what we look at when we're talking about color and color intensity.
Okay.
And the leaf structure on the tobacco is what determines the porosity of the leaf, how well it would absorb liquids that manufacturers might want to put on these leaves and so forth.
Yeah, well, they manufacturers are looking for that. Obviously, there's obvious... with chewing tobacco because they add those additives, but then even with the cigarette tobacco, they have to...
I don't know, mm-hmm. don't have any knowledge as to what they might add
right.
to cigarette tobacco,
yeah.
but if the leaf structure, we'll say, is very porous or open,
oh, okay.
then we'll mm-hmm. say that is a good burning type of tobacco that
yes,
would
sir.
Be ideal for cigarettes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where if the leaf structure yeah. becomes a little bit close and mm-hmm. solid, then we're getting into chewing tobacco mm-hmm. and pipe tobacco.
Other uses. Okay. Different kinds of damaging. This is one of the things that I guess makes tobacco very, very varied because
yes.
it, depending on what's happened, describe some of those different kinds of things.
Well, we speak of injury a whole lot when we're grading tobacco, and by injury I'm talking about how many, well, we'll say insect holes might be in the leaf mm-hmm. or how much of the leaf is torn or begin to shatter off around the edges and so forth.
Yes, sir.
And this injury is brought about partly by cultivation in the field, partly mm-hmm. by insects, of course, where you get a lot of holes in the bottom leaves from flea beetles and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course,
could
you have
weather.
Some hail damage
right.
sometimes and that sort of thing. Another thing, if the tobacco stays in the field too long, by that I'm saying mm-hmm. 2 or 3 weeks beyond the ripe stage, it begins to deteriorate around the edge of the leaves, and
yes,
they break off in little pieces and mm-hmm. so forth. So that is the injury that we're talking about.
Okay.
We have to be able to judge the percentage of that in a lot of tobacco to determine the quality. And so forth.
Where does disease come in? I guess disease affects color and all
well,
these other things.
Disease may affect the color some just by the extent of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
If it was very mild disease of some sort, it won't affect the color very much.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get into something like blue mold that
yes,
we
sir.
Had a bad case of here 3 or 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
now that gets so bad that it does affect color and everything
right.
because the leaf becomes covered with little splotches, you know, and it
mm-hmm.
falls out and so forth, and you get into a lot of injury as well as your color being sort of broken up and disfigured and everything like that.
So it would affect different parts of the grading.
Yes, right.
Okay. Now, we've just gone through 3 or 4 of these factors, and under each factor are three or four different types. We talked about color, and you talked about bright, and so on and so forth. When you add all this together, you have really literally what? There's dozens of grades.
For the burley tobacco here, we have at the present time, I believe, 106 grades.
Okay.
And
yeah.
if we work the other types, such as flu cure, they have 140-something grades.
I see.
So our graders, it takes a lot of time to train them and mm-hmm. get them to the point where they can grade these various types with a minimum of errors, you know. Mm-hmm.
Describe the, when you assign a grade to a tobacco, you make a mark, BF4.
Yes.
Describe what that means, or B4F.
Okay. In grading a tobacco, first of all, we try to determine the stalk position, where the leaves came off the stalk.
Right. Whether the bottom
if
or
they came
top.
Off near the bottom, they're what we call the flyings, and that is described with an X as the X group.
Okay.
Then as we move up the stalk, the next group going up the stalk is, some people refer to them as cutters, some to refer to them as lugs, but that is the C group, so
okay.
far as grades are concerned. And moving on up then, the heavier tobacco gets, we call it the B group. That's
okay.
that's the leaf part that is heavier bodied tobacco used for cigarettes, for cigars and pipe tobacco and chewing tobacco and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But once we determine then where the leaves came off the stalk, then we put the
one of those.
The letter there, you know, either X or C or B, or we even have a tip group in Burley, and the only difference in the tip group and the B group is the length of the leaves.
I see.
If it's under 16 inches off of the top half of the stalk, we call it a tip.
Okay.
But if it's more than 16, then it's in the B group.
Okay. What letter designation does the tip have?
The tip group, we use a T to designate the tip group.
Okay.
And once we have decided then what group the leaves belong in, then we look at it from the point of what quality is it. Is it first quality, second quality, up through fifth quality?
Mm-hmm.
And this is arrived at by the elements of quality that I was speaking of a few minutes ago, the 10 elements of quality. We have to think of these 10 elements and determine what quality this piece of tobacco would fit in, because for example, a B1F, we'll say,
mm-hmm.
has to be 95% uniform. That means 95% of that lot of tobacco has to be plus 20 inches in length. It has to be a bright color intensity. Has to have a smooth finish to it. It cannot have over 5% of injury.
Okay.
So,
and that all is incorporated into this quality characteristic.
That's what we go by to set the quality on the piece
okay.
of tobacco. If the injury picks up a little bit beyond 5%, well then we'd automatically move to second quality.
I see.
And second quality can carry 10% injury.
Okay.
So it's a sort of a chain reaction all the way from 5% down to 30%.
Okay.
And if it gets real severe so far as injury is concerned, such as little short tobacco with a lot of insects and injury from weather conditions and so forth, we might even go to what we call a nondescript grade. And that can come from any of the other groups, but it just has excessive injury, too much to make a standard grade. So we
okay.
put in what we call a nondescript grade, and it could have 50% injury.
Okay. So you have all those, there is a kind of an outcast category.
Yes, right.
You know, just to let the buyers. Is there another part of that grade,
well,
too?
There's another part of the grade there that we hadn't mentioned, is the color symbol that goes on
okay.
the end of the grade.
Color symbol. Okay.
And, we have a variety, of course, of colors, which is, I'm trying to think as we go along, we use a L for a buff color.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very light straw colored tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you move up the stalk a little bit, the leaves have a tendency to get a little heavier and a little darker, and we go to the F color, which is a tan color.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a tan color for all groups, X, C,
right.
B, and T. It can either be tan color, it can be reddish tan, which we call an FR,
mm-hmm.
or it can be a straight red color, and we just indicate this by an R, using R symbol for red.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets a real chocolate brown for some reason, then we have what we call a dark red, and we use a D to describe it as dark color.
Okay, when you add all those different components together, then that's where you come up with this 106 grades.
Yes,
right. All those different combinations.
We have grades to describe green tobacco, and we have grades to describe tobacco that just has a little greenish tinge to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of things to try to describe in the tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people handle their tobacco, and instead of sorting it out or grading it out into three or four grades, which we can or three or four groups which we can
that
handle,
you can handle
very easily.
Right, uh-huh.
Well, they just tie it all up together sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then we have a group of what we call mixed grades to describe where they mix all the groups together, or whether they mix maybe half of the groups together. We'll say they make two grades out of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
When they do that, they generally mix what we call the X group and the C group together,
right,
and the B group and
the
tip together.
Right.
So
okay.
We come up with all sorts of mixtures, and we have to have grades to describe about anything we come to out there on the market.
Obviously, this is very complicated when you talk about trying to assign one of 106 different categories to a piece of tobacco. You mentioned that you started out just as a seasonal worker to Maysville Market. Now, you were, I'm getting into the training aspect of it.
Right.
You were just, you followed around another grader for a while, and he would let you grade a while, or how,
yes.
How did that work?
Well, back then, the way they started the training process, they just told me what day to report to the market and who to report to.
Yes, sir.
So I went to the man they told me, which was the market supervisor for the grading at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he assigns me to an old grader to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So I go along with this old grader, and he does the grading. I just do the pencil work for him. He
okay.
tells me what to put on the ticket,
right.
and I write what he says. And that's the way they start training a new man, you know.
All right.
We do it a little differently now. That was 30 years ago, so now when we hire new people, we bring them into our laboratory here, and we'll train them for 4 or 5 days just to get them familiar with all the paperwork,
mm-hmm.
and then we show them some tobacco for about 2 days and let them understand exactly what we expect them to do out there on the market when they start in the training process.
Okay.
And then from there, they go about like I did. They'll work with an old experienced grader that season. And at the end of the season, then we'll bring them back in here and we'll give them a full week of grading tobacco samples,
mm-hmm.
and even written tests on our
see.
Book of standards to
mm-hmm.
see how much they've learned this first season. If they've made normal progress, then we'll probably give them a one grade promotion and bring them back the next year and mm-hmm. let them grade. The second year, we'll let them grade some tobacco by themselves, but the supervisor will be looking at it all
pretty
the time
closely,
before
huh?
they sell it. To make sure they get the right grade on.
Oh, okay. Double checking that word.
Yes, right.
Now, when you said you raise it one grade, you were talking about the federal grade
classification. Yes,
there,
federal grade
them a little
classification.
Raise or something.
Yes.
Are the graders still seasonal workers for the most part?
Most of them are seasonal workers, mm-hmm. working about 6 months out of the year.
Okay. Talk about that or describe that to me now. You work the Maysville Market, which is one of the bigger markets in the state.
Yes.
Your length of service during a season depends on how much tobacco there is.
That's true.
Now, at that time, you would start usually the week before Thanksgiving. Is that kind of traditional?
So that's traditional. When the market opens, it's
right.
the week before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But, let's go back to when I started
yes,
back
sir.
30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
If we just worked the Burley region.
Yes, sir.
They paid us for 3.5 months.
Okay.
Now, the market might run 10 weeks or 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But they paid us for 3.5 months. Once we started cross-typing, we call it going through the Flue-Cured region as
mm-hmm.
well as the Burley region, then they would pay us 9 months out of the year if we worked both types. Later on in later years, they decided apparently that we were being paid too many months and the market was getting shorter all the time.
Yes, sir.
So that brought about a change, and for several years now, since about 1965, the graders get paid just exactly what days they're on the market.
Mm-hmm.
We might bring them on duty now, say the 15th of July, for an example.
Yes, sir.
And send them to the Flue-Cured region.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'll stay down there until the last of October or the first week of November. Then they'll come home and we'll give them a week or maybe sometimes 2 weeks pre-market training, we call it, to prepare them to switch from the Flue-Cured region to the Burley region,
mm-hmm.
and then put them on our Burley markets here. But as soon as that Burley market closes for the season, then they're furloughed until the following July again.
I see. Okay.
So it's all seasonal work.
Now that was, at what point did you decide to go to the Flue-Cured market? Was that something you wanted to do as soon as you had an offer? Or?
Well, no. Like I said, I grew up on the farm, and I've always farmed to a certain extent.
Yes, sir.
So I was growing a crop of tobacco and working as a grader here in the Burley region.
Mm-hmm.
But needed more income and so forth. So I decided maybe I could grow a crop and go down there too. So I tried going to the Plucard region and hiring somebody to house my burley crop of tobacco.
Yes, sir.
But that didn't work satisfactorily. We couldn't get it in at the right time. We couldn't get the right help. So I finally had to start renting my crop out, give away half of it, trade that half for working in the Plucard region.
Now, are graders, are they kind of like the, you have, a market has a set of buyers, and you only need as many graders as you have buyers, I assume.
Well, you only we
don't need as many.
No, we use 3 and 4 graders for each set of buyers.
Okay.
Depends a whole lot on the volume of tobacco that the market sells, whether we will need 3 graders or 4 graders. Mm-hmm. Generally, we use 3. Sometimes we use 4. Mm-hmm.
And they'll stay all the way through the. They won't stay all the way through the market, though, will they? I mean, if they. On a market, if they do away with a set of buyers, for example, if they have 3 sets and go down to 2, will your youngest graders then be furloughed at that point?
Well, yes, generally speaking, the ones with the smallest seniority would go off first, you know, mm-hmm. in a case like that.
Right.
Well, we were talking some minutes ago about the Maysville market, which mm-hmm. generally had 3 sets of buyers
yes, sir.
And graders. Mm-hmm. Whenever their volume drops off to where they only need 2 sets, then we'll take off 1 set of our graders also and furlough them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so there are graders, I guess who goes depends, does it depend solely on seniority or sometimes the wishes of, if you've got someone, do we have any North Carolina people grading up here?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so they might want to go home.
Well, they might want to go home, uh-huh. and at the same time, we have to watch the budget pretty close.
Yeah, I see.
And when they're out here or we're down there, we're on a per diem every day, you know,
okay.
they pay all of our living expenses. And
I see.
So the quicker we can get them home, the cheaper it is too.
And you are pretty vigilant about that. You do want to say.
Oh,
that.
We have to watch that closely because, as you know now, the grading is paid for by a user fee that the farmers pay,
right.
and we try to hold the cost down just as much as
save
we can.
As much money for them
right.
as you can. Now your title is regional director. Does that mean you're just involved now in the burley market?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
There's a regional director then.
There's a similar position for the Plucard region.
Market.
Yes, for North Carolina.
I don't want to spend a whole lot about the Plucard market, but because the project really deals with Kentucky, but just in your own words, how does the tobacco compare, and what were the major differences?
Well, of course, we use a lot of the same grade symbols in both types.
I mean,
we have a B4F in
sure.
Burley, and we have a B4F in Plucard.
Okay.
But they're different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Their tobacco is all cured, as you know, with heat. In,
right.
And they don't take the stalk to the barn. They take just the leaves. So it's all cured with artificial heat, and if it cures properly, it will be about the color of a lemon or a light orange.
I see.
And that's the desirable colors.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, like our burley tobacco, sometimes it doesn't come out the way you expected
That's
it
right.
to, and it might have a different color.
Mm-hmm.
But Plucard tobacco is a little more difficult to grade for our people because they have more grades, and so many of the grades look exactly alike in regard to color.
I see.
You have to learn to feel the tobacco and even to smell it sometimes to tell where it came off the stalk and what group it belongs in. Where with burley, you can generally pretty much by the color tell where it came off the stalk.
But there's more differences than in the burley.
That's right.
To give you some clues.
Their tobacco down there might be the same color on the bottom of the stalk or the top of the stalk. You have to learn the feel of the leaves and the shape of the leaves,
mm-hmm.
the texture of them to determine just exactly where it was growing on the stalk.
Do most of them work both markets now?
Most of our graders work both types now. Mm-hmm. That is one requirement when we recruit new people. They have to agree to work both types, or we don't hire them.
Mm-hmm. And you've already mentioned the Plucard market runs from like the middle of July to the first week of November, maybe.
Right.
And then you begin with November and run through January.
January to the middle of February on burley.
Have both of those markets constricted a little bit now? I mean, as far as the time frames?
Yes, they have, and that creates some problem for us in employment with our graders, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, in recent years, the quotas have been reduced so much that the market gets a little bit shorter all the time.
Right.
And if we have a normal curing, stripping season, why, Burley may, 95% of it be sold by the first week of January. So it gets to be more of a problem every year to occupy our people and to hire good people because of the seasonal employment.
Right. And they are only hired for those time periods too.
Yes,
they just,
right.
Are there any of the graders that go to other markets? I know there's, you know, the Maryland market. And
You mentioned the Maryland market, but you know, a few years ago they voted up there to do away with the quotas.
Oh, that's right.
And the grading, so we don't grade anything in Maryland anymore. But now we do have a group of people that grades the dark farred tobacco down Western Kentucky and Tennessee, and we have another group that grades the dark air cured in Western Kentucky and Tennessee.
And they're a little later than us. Their seasons are
later. They're later than the Burley, and of course they're operated out of this office here, but they are later, and the dark farred markets usually don't open until January, where the dark air cured will open about a week after the Burley opens.
I see. Let me, from your experience in this administrative position, also your experience as an actual grader out there, discuss with me.
Excuse me.
I was going to ask you about, from your experience, graders have to deal with a lot of different people. We talked about some of the different, some of the administrative kinds of things that they deal with, but when a grader's out there on a Burley warehouse floor, he's liable to have farmers come up to him and look over his shoulder or say things to him. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, like you mentioned, it is a part of the job. It goes along with it, I guess, dealing with the public. And we have all sorts of encounters with the producers and the warehouse operators and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, it's a pretty good relationship between the graders and the producers. Like everything else, you're always going to have some disagreements, a difference of opinion as to what grade you think goes on that pile of tobacco. And a lot of people would like to tell the grader what grade to put on there because they realize that whatever grade he puts on there has a price support that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the better grade they can get, the higher their price support is going to be. So naturally, everybody wants the highest grade they can possibly get on that tobacco.
Why, since you brought that up, and we haven't really talked about that, what constitutes a good grade? Obviously, the better the quality, first quality is better than fifth quality.
Right. The higher quality, as far as the grade is concerned, is the one that carries the biggest price support. Like you say, for example, a B1F may have a price support of $1.63 or 62 cents, I forgot which, but a B4F may be $1.55. So there's $8 or $10 spread there in a lot of grades, and even more than that in some of the greener grades of tobacco and so forth.
What about the where the tobacco came from, the fines versus the tip? Does that bring does tip tobacco automatically bring a higher support than?
No, not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
The best tip grade we have starts at third quality.
I see.
Because first and second quality tobacco has to be long anyway, you know. So,
all right. So they would all be the
tips
grades.
Are all short, and the price support, though pretty good on good tips, is not as good as our best grades in the flines.
Okay. And then how does the price relate to color?
There's a very close range in regard to price and color.
Mm-hmm.
For example, an F, which is tan, a tan colored piece of tobacco, or a reddish tan, which is an FR, probably would only be, in a lot of cases, just one penny's difference in the price support. So it's not a big break there in regard to color and price support.
This is side two of a tape with Mr. Newman here at the USDA office in Lexington for marketing, USDA marketing office. We were talking about the relationship between price and this grade, and we were talking about the problems of a grader. Do you remember any specific incidences of where you had particular problems with a producer?
Certain crops bring about their own problems, and some years we have dry weather crops, wet weather crops, and green crops, and this sort of thing. But the ones that probably give us the most trouble is the crops of tobacco where we have a lot of rain during the stripping season, and people bring their tobacco to market with too much moisture in it. And then when that happens and it's got so much moisture in it that we think it's in doubtful keeping order, mm-hmm. We have to put a W after the grade that we put on there. For example, we might grade a pile of tobacco B3FW, mm-hmm. indicating that it has too much moisture to be in safe keeping order, because we never know how long it has to keep until it's going to get through the redryer.
Sure.
And at the same time, if it gets too much moisture, then it sometimes becomes stained and changes mm-hmm. the color of it. But I do recall some instances where the farmers were very displeased if we put a W on their tobacco. And I remember going in a warehouse one time in Maysville, and as I went in the door, I met the supervisor coming out of the door. He said, "Lawrence, there's a crop of tobacco back there that is maybe on the breaking line so far as moisture is concerned, so you use your own judgment as to whether you think it needs a W on it or not." So I looked at the tobacco, and the tobacco had been sold a few days before and had been rejected because it was too high in order. And I put the W on it again, and the farmer approached me about it, and apparently, unconsciously, I smiled at him or something, and he said, "That's all right, you don't need to laugh about it, you haven't heard the last of this yet." So so he was pretty ill, and I didn't intend it that way. I just thought the tobacco had too much moisture, mm-hmm. you know. So we have all sorts of things like that come up.
Of course, you're not into that end of it, but tobacco that was stored like that could literally, it could rot.
Yes, sometimes if it gets to the extreme, it will get hot on the pile and
sure.
begin to rot. You know?
Okay. Another group of individuals you have to deal with, the warehousemen. Of course, they give you the same kinds of, I guess, problems as the farmer. They wanting to get the highest price for their customers. Do same kind of circumstances there?
Well, pretty much. Of course, that warehouse operator is, we'll say, the middleman. He's mm-hmm. many times. The farmer, rather than approach the grader himself, will ask his warehouseman, say, "Can't you get a hold of that grader and get me a better grade on my tobacco?" Mm-hmm. And when he does that, of course, the warehouseman has got to make an attempt to help his customer, you know,
sure.
to keep him happy. So we expect that, and mm-hmm. So long as they're reasonable with their requests, and we give them every consideration we can, you know, we're glad to go back and re-examine the tobacco
right.
and make sure we didn't make any mistake in the first place.
Right. Now, of course, on occasion you will do that just as a courtesy, go back and look at it. Or
sure. Yeah. Many times we know that there's nothing we can do. We've
right.
already examined it good,
sure.
but we
mm-hmm.
give them courtesy of going back and look at it.
Yeah.
Many times the producer might not be there when we grade the tobacco, too. Sometimes our graders will start in the mornings.
Sure.
If the light is good, they'll start grading as soon as they can see real good in order to stay far enough ahead of the buyers to
right.
to have time to talk with the farmers and so forth. So if we get some grade before the farmer comes in and then he's dissatisfied, well, certainly we want to go back and talk with him about it and mm-hmm. see if there's anything we can do.
Now, those are primarily, I guess, the two groups you talk to. You don't get much, graders don't have much contact with buyers or
auctioneers. Not very much, no.
Just other than they're on the same market.
Of course, you know, over the years and following the same pattern about every year, you become acquainted with a lot of company employees
sure.
and auctioneers and
sure.
all this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have some comments from them and some contact with them, but nothing mm-hmm. of any importance.
Yeah. If you will tell me about the volume of work we do or that a grader does. It seems to me you've got a very complicated process here and a complicated rating system, but your graders get to the point where they can do this very quickly.
Yes, true. After two or three years experience, or three or four years, a grader gets to the point where he can move along and, well, if you just put him out there by himself, he could probably grade, well, let's say 150 piles an hour without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that doesn't happen because there's always
right.
somebody wanting to stop and ask him about this pile and that
sure.
pile and so forth. But a normal sale here in the Burley region is 1,260 baskets per day.
Okay.
And in many cases, due to a changed sales schedule and so forth, we're getting up to 1,400 or something like that per day. So if we put three graders out there, you can see they've got 300 or 400 piles per person to get graded.
Through.
And the sale generally will start at, say, 9:30 and run 2.5 hours, and then they'll take an hour break for lunch and go back and sell about another hour after lunch.
Mm-hmm. So your graders are there earlier than that, obviously.
Yes, the graders always start at least an hour ahead of the buyers if the light will permit, because they sell it much faster than we can grade it.
Sure.
But it is it's pretty much of a nerve-wracking process, you know, because most of our graders are farm people to start with. Mm-hmm. And they have the farmer's interest at heart, and that's the way it should be.
Sure.
So they're going to make every effort to see that he gets just the best grade that they can give him.
They
can legally put on there, you know.
Now, I guess there's beside each one of these things, and you've talked about it, 5% damage and 10% damage, and then the length of the leaves and so forth, there's certain observable criteria. But over the years, do grades kind of vary and change, and is there any?
Well, very little, if I understand your point exactly. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any noticeable change, hardly, in the 30 years that I have worked. There is some change brought about, and I think it has been brought about a whole lot by the change in varieties. You know,
like the hybrids and all those kinds.
Yes, the hybrid varieties have come along, and the leaves are not the same shape as they used to be.
Yes, sir.
And then along came sucker control, so the top of the plant doesn't spread out like it used to years ago when we topped it and let it spread and then suckered it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes for a difference in the shape of the leaves and the length of the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the disease problem that many of us have had, you get into such things as black shank, and you have to start growing the resistant varieties to try to take care of that, you know. And many of the resistant varieties don't seem to have the same leaf structure and the same shape of leaves as the older varieties had. Okay. So there is some differences.
Yeah, those are important for the purposes of this tape. Let me go through those again, review them real quick. What you're saying is that now with the sucker control, when you hand suckered to the tobacco and topped it, you know, the top leaves would get larger.
Would normally get larger, much spreadier, you know. And if you got in the barn at the right time, probably better quality tobacco for what they use the top of the stalk for at that time, like chewing tobacco and pipe tobacco. And so forth.
Yeah, and then the hybrid varieties. How has that affected the hybrid and the disease resistant? How has that affected the plant? Does it cure differently, or it doesn't?
Well,
the leaves aren't as broad, or
it seems like most of the varieties that we have tried, the leaves don't get quite as broad.
There you go.
And I think that's partly with the variety, and partly with, like I said, spraying them for suckers and so forth, so we don't leave it in the field maybe as long as we did years ago, and the top leaves just don't spread out as much as they did without the sucker control on them.
What about the care of the crop that the farmer has? That does that affect the grade? Obviously it does, because of damage and so forth. Is in your appraisal, is there less care being taken now than there was 25 years ago?
Well, I think so. I remember years ago when my father was farming, and when I was coming up as a teenager and so forth, he stripped his tobacco in four or five or six grades, you know, and take out the what we call the very low quality flies. We just drop them off and maybe try them up themselves at night, and then we had a good, what we call a good flying, and then a good lug and a short lug and so on up the stalk. But we don't do that anymore. I don't know if it's a lack of patience, or I think partly what brought it about, the buying companies didn't make enough difference in the price for a farmer to afford to sort it out like that, especially after labor got much higher than it used to be. So just don't handle it like we used to. Everybody seems to be in a hurry to get what they're going to do, get it done quick and get it sold and all that.
This government grading system, of course, this was before you became involved with the service, but is this an outgrowth of the 1938 legislation too, the Agricultural Adjustment Act?
Probably so, because they started grading some back in early 30s even. They graded a little.
There was an act in 1933, and then they updated that. So maybe that was the break point.
And most all the markets became or chose to be graded along about 40 and 41 from there on, you know. And
I see. There were. It was optional there for a while.
Yes, for a period of time it was optional. And even back there when it first started, I believe the farmers paid a small fee to have it graded. And then when they all came into the fold, so to speak, along about 40, 41, and in there, that's when we started grading everywhere.
Well, if you want to participate in the program, farmers and warehouses have no option but to have government graders, is that correct?
That's correct. If you want to sell at a public auction, it must be graded.
Okay. Let's get back to that other point. You said now that the growers are paying for this service.
Yes.
That was as a result of this, that legislation just happened a few years ago.
Yes, it's legislation, I believe, 83.
83,
right.
I think so.
As a result of the tobacco bill there in 83, it is now set up to where the farmers pay what we call a user fee or a grading fee to have the tobacco graded on the market. Most other commodities are handled the same way, you know, the producer pays for a grading.
Okay.
And
now, prior to that, was it just a program of the Department of Agriculture?
Prior to that, it was just an agriculture program that was financed with taxpayer funds.
Right, so right. But of course, I guess producers would say, well, we pay taxes too, so this is just one of the services that we were getting. But,
sure.
But after that point, that was the break point. What about the graders? And, you know, I don't, they have government classifications, you said.
Yes.
So what kinds of income or what kinds of pay would a grader make, because he's only on the job a limited amount of time?
All right.
Just, you know, rough figure.
Right, okay.
Think,
if
exactly.
if we go out here and recruit a dozen graders next month for this coming mm-hmm. year, their starting salary would be, according to civil service regulations and so forth, would be about, I don't have the exact figure, about $14,000 per mm-hmm. year. Now, bear in mind that they're only going to work 6 months, so they'll only get half of that.
I see.
And then a journeyman grader's starting salary, so to speak, after he has been trained about 2 to 3 years,
mm-hmm.
his salary would get up to around $20,000. And then he gets maybe a 3% increase every year for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the increases become a little farther apart as he goes along.
But that $20,000, that would just be half of that amount, too.
That's true.
Yeah, so you don't talk. And yeah. then, of course, per diem, I guess, is
it's
has
not,
to be. Yeah.
Well, you may not be interested in the amount and so forth, but generally speaking, they get $25 a day to pay their lodging and their meals. Well, $25
right.
for the lodging and
yeah,
$25
some,
to pay their meals and
right.
their laundry and that sort of
sure.
thing when they have to stay away from home.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Of course, you did that for many years, went down to North Carolina. What's that like, leaving the family and
well,
being in Jersey?
Of course, I can only give you my own
sure.
experience.
Uh-huh.
It was very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had a young wife and two small boys at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I went off down there to grade tobacco, and it was pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Basically for 2 or 3 years. After that,
oh,
you
yeah.
sort of get accustomed to it,
right.
you know, and it becomes a way of life then. You don't think too much about it anymore.
Back to the idea of the different grades and prices, have you seen graders, or do they go back and see what the companies are buying? Of course, I guess that doesn't have any influence on anything.
That, I hope, wouldn't have any influence on our graders.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, once you get this old tobacco in your blood, you're
mm-hmm.
sort of interested in every part
right.
of it, you know.
Right.
So, and especially uh-huh. if you farm some yourself.
Sure. Because you're going to see what happens
right.
to your own tobacco. Right?
So you're interested in seeing
uh-huh.
what they're paying for certain types
right.
of tobacco, because you say, well, this looks somewhat like mine. I'd like to know
mm-hmm.
what that's going to bring.
Sure.
You might go back to look at that. But we don't encourage our graders to go back and look
mm-hmm.
behind the sale, because we're afraid it might influence our judgment,
right.
you know.
Well, I guess what I was going to ask, it's another way to get the question, has, in your experience, have what the company's been looking for changed over the years? Is there any way?
Well, I would have to think so, yes, because, like I say, I remember back when I first started farming on my own back in, late 40s,
mm-hmm.
early 50s, the tobacco that brought the highest price was the good, what we call cigarette tobacco, and that
mm-hmm.
was good flyings and good lugs at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe it was long about 66, maybe, when the filter-tip cigarette first came on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, just right there in 1 year, everything went to a heavier type of tobacco, and they wanted the heavier stuff to go in this filter-tip cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
So the price shifted a little bit then to the top of the stalk rather than being so much on the bottom of the stalk.
I see. Right. And that's where it remains today.
But it still remains that
because
way.
Of the filter. What about, is there, of course, you set a support price, and if that price, if the buyers don't pay, I guess, it's a penny more than that, I think.
Yes.
Then that goes to a cooperative.
Yes.
Is there any relationship, official relationship, between you and that cooperative?
No, nothing official. We, you know, we work very closely with them, sort of like brothers.
Sure.
But it's a little different phase of the operation, and our fellows are not really connected with the price support.
Yeah.
We just try to describe the tobacco, and then the commodity credit through the co-op has a price support to go along with each one of our government grades.
Yeah. I guess what I was asking, the way you, say one season that a whole lot of tobacco was going to the pool, would that influence next year how you establish the prices for the grade?
That does enter into it in under this new tobacco bill and so forth.
Okay.
But now ASCS and commodity credit works out that price support scale, and we don't have any input into it whatsoever.
Okay. You just, again, your people, just technicians grading at tobacco. It's up to somebody else to establish the price and see what happens to it after that and change the laws and so forth.
That's right.
Okay. This is a federal position, and it's been around now, I guess, a little more than 50 years because of those Depression era legislation. Does politics, most of the people protected by merit, where does that merit end and begin? Is your position a merit position or a political appointee?
My position is still a merit position.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, once you leave this position and move on up, it becomes more political all the time, even though our director in Washington is not a political appointee.
I see.
It still takes on the same aspect, so to speak.
Politics, yes. I see. You mentioned earlier when we were talking that you had to go to Washington next week, for example. What kinds of responsibilities, what takes you to Washington, what kinds of things do you have to do there?
Well, generally, when we have to make a trip up there in recent years, it's just for a short training session on some new program that has come out or something like that.
I see.
We're going up there and just take a four-hour course on the way we recruit people and the way we select them from the hiring register and so forth.
I see. Now, how has personnel changed over the last years? Do you've got a season coming up next year, and of course the crops are shorter than they were. The crop seasons are shorter, and some of the crops are smaller. Does that mean you won't be hiring very many new people, or is there always constant hiring? Or
we generally hire a few people every year, but like you mentioned, the smaller the crop gets, the fewer people we need, of course.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we have maybe 15 to 20 people retire or resign about every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we hire approximately that many. We may hire 10 this year and 20 next year and that sort of thing. But we hire a few every year and we lose a few every year.
Is there any... The tobacco community is a fairly small community. As you said, you know people in the co-op and ASCS people and so forth. Is there, are you ever called upon or do you, are you involved with things like the tobacco program or the existence of the tobacco program, or that's something that you really stay out of?
We try as much as possible to stay out of things like that, you know, because the government's always hollering about conflict of interest.
Sure,
in this sort.
Sure.
So we have to be extremely cautious
careful.
Of what we get involved in.
Right. Well, I guess where that question is going really is, you know, the program, all the positions, your position and the people in this department, their position really depends on the program.
Yes.
Weren't for the program, it wouldn't be graders.
That's true.
You're aware of, you know, the things that have happened the last few years. What's your outlook for these, for government graders, for example?
Well, my opinion, of course, is worth about 2 cents. But I tell some of the fellows sometimes, I say, well, it looks pretty dark for tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
But I came into this outfit 31 years ago, and right then I kept hearing people talk about, well, we won't be grading tobacco much longer, or the tobacco program's going to go out, and this sort of thing. And that was 30 years ago, so I just hesitate to even take a guess, you know.
The next century, there might be people saying the same thing.
That's true.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me.
I enjoy it. I like to talk tobacco anytime.
All right. Thank you.